Chapter 6. The farmer and his oldest boy carried Honeywell to the Land Rover. Pitt rode in the back, holding the oceanographer's head in his lap. He closed the glazed, sightless eyes and smoothed the few long strands of white hair. Most children would have been terrified of death, but the boys and girls who surrounded Pitt in the bed of the truck sat silently and calmly, their expressions devoid of all but total acceptance of the only certainty that waits for everyone. The farmer, a big, handsome, outdoor-hardened man, drove slowly up a narrow road to the top of the cliff and through the meadows, pulling a small cloud of volcanic red dust behind the tailgate. Within minutes he stopped at a small cottage on the outskirts of a village of white farmhouses, dominated by the traditional Icelandic churchyard. A somber little man with soft green eyes enlarged by thick steel-rimmed glasses came out, introduced himself as Dr. Jonsson, and, after examining Honeywell, led Pitt into the cottage, where he stitched and bandaged Pitt's 3-inch head gash and made him change into some dry clothes. Later, as Pitt was drinking a strong brew of coffee and schnapps forced on him by the doctor, the boy and his father entered. The boy nodded to Pitt and spoke. "My father would consider it a great honor if he could transport you and your friend to Reykjavik, if that is where you wish to go." Pitt stood and stared a moment into the father's warm gray eyes. "You tell your father that I am deeply grateful, and that the honor is mine." Pitt held out his hand, and the Icelander gripped it hard. The boy translated. His father simply nodded, and then they both turned and left the room without another word. Pitt lit a cigarette and looked quizzically at Dr. Jonsson. "You're a member of a strange people, Doctor. You all seem to be brimming with warmth and courtesy within, but your exterior seems completely dry of any emotion. You'll find the citizens of Reykjavik more open. This is the country. We are born into an isolated and stark but beautiful land. Icelanders who live away from the city are not noted for gossip. We can almost come to understand each other's thoughts before we speak. Life and love are commonplace. Death is merely an accepted occurrence." I wondered why the children appeared so unconcerned when sitting next to a corpse. "Death to us is merely a separation, and only a visual one at that. For you see," the doctor's hand pointed through a large picture window at the gravestones in the churchyard, "they who went before us are still here." Pitt stared several moments at the grave markers, all rising on their individual crooked angles among the green mossy grass. Then his attention was caught by the farmer, who was carrying a hand-crafted pine coffin to the Land Rover. He watched attentively as the big, silent man lifted Honeywell's form into the traditional tapered box with all the strength and tenderness of a new father with a baby. "What is the farmer's name?" Pitt asked.
"Munson, Thorstein Munson. His son's name is Bjarni."
Pitt stared through the window until the coffin was pushed slowly onto the truck bed. Then he turned away. "I'll always wonder if Dr. Honeywell would still be alive if I'd done things differently. Who will ever know? Remember, my friend, if you had been born 10 minutes sooner or 10 minutes later, your path might never have crossed his." Pitt smiled. "I get what you mean. But the fact is, his life was in my hands and I fumbled and lost it." He hesitated, seeing the scene again in his mind. "On the beach, I passed out for half an hour after I bandaged his arm. If I had stayed awake, he might not have bled to death." "Put your conscience to rest. Your Dr. Honeywell did not die from loss of blood. It was the shock of his injury, the shock of your crash, the shock of below-freezing seawater. No, I'm certain an autopsy will show that his aging heart gave out long before his blood. He was getting on in years, and he was not, from what I could determine, a physically athletic man. He was a scientist, an oceanographer, the best. Then I envy him." Pitt looked at the village physician speculatively.
"Why do you say that?"
"He was a man of the sea, and he died by the sea he loved, and perhaps his last thoughts were as serene as the water."
"He talked of God," Pitt murmured.
"He was fortunate. Yet I feel I will be fortunate when my time comes to be laid to rest over there in the churchyard, only 100 steps from where I was born, and among so many of the people I have loved and cared for. I wish I could share your affinity for staying in one spot, Doctor. But somewhere in the distant past, one of my ancestors was a gypsy. I've inherited his wandering ways.
3 years is my all-time record for living in the same location. An interesting question. Which of us is the most fortunate? Pitt shrugged. Who can tell? We both hear the beat of a different drummer. In Iceland, Jonsson said, we follow the lure of a different fisherman. You missed your true calling, Doctor. You should have been a poet. Ah, but I am a poet. Dr. Jonsson laughed. Every village has at least 4 or 5. You will have to search far and wide for a more literate country than Iceland. Over 500,000 books are sold annually to 200,000 people, our entire population. He broke off as the door opened and 2 men walked in. They stood calm, efficient, and very official in their police uniforms. One nodded a greeting to the doctor, and Pitt suddenly got the entire picture. You needn't have been secretive about calling the police, Dr. Jonsson. I have nothing to conceal from anyone. No offense, but Dr. Honeywell's arm was obviously mangled by gunshots. I've treated enough injured hunters to know the correct signs. The law is explicit, as I'm sure it is in your country. I must report all bullet wounds. Pitt didn't like it much, but he had little option. The 2 muscular policemen standing before him would hardly buy a story about a phantom black jet attacking and shooting the Ulysses full of holes before being rammed in midair. A connection between the derelict in the iceberg and the jet was neither coincidental nor accidental. He was certain now that what started out as a simple search for a missing ship had turned out to be an unwanted involvement in a complex, far-flung conspiracy. He was tired. Tired of lying. Sick of the whole goddamn mess. Only one thought gripped his mind. Honeywell was dead, and someone had to pay. "Were you the pilot of the helicopter that crashed, sir?" one of the policemen inquired. An unmistakable British accent and a courteous tone, but the "sir" seemed forced. "Yes," was all Pitt answered. The policeman seemed taken aback for a moment by Pitt's terse reply. He was blonde, had dirty fingernails, and was dressed in a uniform that left his wrists and ankles showing. "Your name and the name of the deceased?" "Pitt, Major Dirk Pitt, United States Air Force." The man in the coffin was Dr. William Honeywell, National Underwater Marine Agency. Pitt thought it strange that neither policeman made an attempt to write the information down. "Your destination, it was undoubtedly the airfield at Keflavik?" "No, the heliport in Reykjavik." A flicker of surprise crossed the blonde policeman's eyes. It was barely perceptible, but Pitt caught it. The interrogator turned to his partner, a dark-skinned, burly character with glasses, and said something in Icelandic. He swung his head toward the Land Rover outside, scowled noticeably, then turned back to Pitt. "Could you tell me your departure point, sir?"
"Greenland."
"Couldn't give you the name of the town. It's spelled with 20 letters, and to an American it's totally unpronounceable. Dr. Honeywell and I were on an expedition for our government, charting icebergs in the East Greenland Current. The idea was to crisscross the Denmark Strait by refueling at Reykjavik, and then head back west to Greenland on a parallel course 50 miles further north. Unfortunately, we didn't plan well, ran out of fuel, and crashed on the coast. That's all, give or take a few details." Pitt lied without knowing exactly why. God, he thought, it's becoming a habit.
"Where exactly did you crash?"
"How the hell should I know?" Pitt said unpleasantly. "Go 3 blocks past the cow pasture and turn left at Broadway. The helicopter is parked between the 3rd and 4th waves. It's painted yellow. You can't miss it."
"Please be reasonable, sir."
Pitt took satisfaction at the sudden flame in the policeman's face. "We must have all the details in order to make a report to our superior." "Then why don't you stop beating around the bush and ask about Dr. Honeywell's bullet wounds?" The official facial expression on the dark-skinned policeman cracked a stifled yawn. Pitt stared at Dr. Jonsson. "You did say that's the reason they're here."
"It is my duty to cooperate with the law."
Jonsson seemed hesitant to speak.
"Suppose you explain your comrade's wound," said Dirty Nails.
"We were carrying a rifle to shoot polar bears," Pitt said slowly. "It accidentally discharged in the crash, the bullet striking Dr. Honeywell in the elbow." As far as Pitt could see, the 2 Icelandic policemen weren't reacting at all to his sarcasm. They stood quiet, looking at him with impatient speculation. Speculation, Pitt thought, at how they would subdue him if he resisted any physical demands on their part. He didn't have to wait long.
I am sorry, sir, but you force us to take you to our headquarters for further interrogation. The only place you'll take me is to the American consulate in Reykjavik. I have committed no crime against the people of Iceland, nor broken any of your laws. I am quite familiar with our laws, Major Pitt. We do not relish getting out of bed at this time of morning for an investigation. The questions are necessary. You have not answered them to our satisfaction, so we must take you to our headquarters until we can determine what happened. There you will be free to call your consulate. In due time, officer, but first would you mind identifying yourselves? I do not understand. The policeman stared coldly at Pitt. Why should we identify ourselves? It is obvious what we are. Dr. Janssen can vouch for our authenticity. He offered no papers or the usual police identification card. All he showed was his irritation. There is no doubt as to your official capacity, gentlemen, Janssen said in an almost apologetic tone. However, Sergeant Arnerson usually patrols our village. I do not believe I have seen you come through our village before. Arnerson had an emergency call in Grindavik. He asked us to answer your call until he could arrive. Are you being transferred to this territory? No, we were just passing through on our way to the north to pick up a prisoner. We stopped in to say hello and have a cup of coffee with Sergeant Arnerson. Unfortunately, before the pot became hot, he received your call and the one from Grindavik almost simultaneously. Then wouldn't it be wise to hold Major Pitt until the sergeant arrives? No, I think not. Nothing can be accomplished here. He turned to Pitt. My apologies, Major. Please do not be angry at our, how do you say it in your country, running you in. He turned to Janssen. I think it best if you came along too, Doctor, in case the Major has complications from his wounds. It's merely a formality. A strange formality, Pitt thought, considering the circumstances. He had little choice but to comply with the policeman's wishes. What about Dr. Honeywell? We will ask Sergeant Arnerson to send a lorry for him. Janssen smiled almost diffidently. Forgive me, gentlemen, I haven't quite finished with the Major's head wound. I have two more stitches to insert before he is ready for travel. If you please, Major. He stood aside and motioned Pitt back into the examining room, closing the door. I thought you were all through butchering me, Pitt said good-naturedly. Those men are impostors, Janssen whispered. Pitt said nothing. There was no surprise on his face as he stepped softly over to the door, put an ear against it, and listened. Satisfied when he could hear voices across the next room, he came back and faced Janssen. You're positive? Yes, Sergeant Arnerson does not patrol Grindavik. Also, he never drinks coffee. His system is allergic to it, so he refuses even to stock it in his kitchen. Your sergeant, does he stand 5'9" and weigh about 170 pounds? To the inch and within 5 pounds. He is an old friend. I have examined him many times. Janssen's eyes clouded with puzzlement. How could you describe a man you have never met? The character who does all the talking is wearing Arnerson's uniform. If you look closely, you can see the outlines where the sergeant's stripes used to rest on the sleeve. I do not understand, Janssen said in a whisper. His face was very pale. What is happening? I don't have half the answers. 16, maybe as many as 19 men have died, and the killing will probably go on. I'd guess Sergeant Arnerson was the latest victim. You and I are next. Janssen looked stricken, his hands clenched and unclenched in bewilderment and despair. You mean I must die because I have seen and talked with two murderers? I'm afraid, Doctor, that you're an innocent bystander that must be eliminated simply because you can recognize their faces. And you, Major, why have they concocted such an elaborate scheme to kill you? Dr. Honeywell and I also saw something that we shouldn't have. Janssen stared into Pitt's impassive face. It would be impossible to murder us both without creating excitement in the village. Iceland is a small country. A fugitive could not run very far nor hide very long. These men are no doubt professionals when it comes to killing. Someone is paying them and paying them well. An hour after we are dead, they'll probably be relaxing with a drink in one hand aboard a jetliner bound for either Copenhagen, London, or Montreal. They seem lax for professional assassins. They can afford to be. Where can we go? Their car and Munson's truck are in front of the house. They'd easily cut us off before we could open a door. Pitt swung a hand toward a window. Iceland is open country. There aren't 10 trees within 50 miles. You said it yourself. A fugitive could not run very far nor hide very long.
Janssen bowed his head in silent acceptance, then he grinned faintly.
Then our only alternative is to fight. It is going to be difficult taking a life after spending 30 years trying to save them.
Do you have any firearms?
Janssen sighed heavily. No, my hobby is fishing, not hunting. The only equipment I possess that might be classed as weapons are my surgical instruments.
Pitt walked over to a white, steel-framed, glass-paneled cabinet that held an assortment of neatly arranged medical instruments and drugs, and opened the door.
We have one convenient advantage, he said thoughtfully. They don't know we're wise to their nasty little plot. Therefore, we shall introduce them to a good old American game known as Pin the Tail on the Donkey.
Only 2 more minutes had elapsed when Janssen opened the door to the examining room, revealing Pitt parked on a stool holding a bandage to his bleeding head.
Janssen motioned to the blond man who spoke English.
Could you please assist me for a moment? I am afraid that I need a third hand.
The man raised his eyebrow questioningly, then shrugged to his partner, who sat with his eyes half closed, his overconfidence giving birth to thoughts 1,000 miles away. Janssen, keeping any suspicion at a low level, purposely left the door slightly ajar, but not enough to allow vision of more than a fraction of the examining room.
If you could hold the Major's head on a slight angle with both hands, then I can finish without interruption. He keeps twitching and ruining any chance for a neat stitch job.
Janssen winked and then spoke in Icelandic.
These Americans are like children when it comes to pain.
The fraudulent policeman laughed and nudged the doctor with his elbow. Then he walked around in front of Pitt, bent down and gripped Pitt's head with both hands on the temples.
Come, come, Major Pitt, a few stitches are nothing. What if the good doctor had to amputate your...
It was all over in less than 4 seconds, silently. With seeming indifference and nonchalance, Pitt reached up his hands and grabbed the blond man around the wrists. Surprise showed for a brief instant in the stranger's face. Then true shock as Janssen clamped a heavy gauze pad over his mouth and jammed a syringe against his neck in the same movement. The shock gave way to terror, and he moaned in his throat, a moan that could not be heard because Pitt was loudly cursing Janssen for a non-existent sewing operation. The eyes above the white gauze began to lose focus, and the man made a desperate effort to hurl himself backward, but his wrists were held solidly in the vise of Pitt's grip. Then the eyes turned upward, and he quietly collapsed into Janssen's arms. Pitt quickly knelt down and pulled a service revolver from the unconscious man's belt holster and stepped softly to the door. As soundless as he was swift, he lined up the gun and jerked open the door, swinging it all the way to its stop. For a second, the tough-looking brute with the spectacles sat there in stunned immobility, staring at Pitt in the doorway. Then his hand shot to his holster. Freeze! Pitt ordered. The command was ignored, and a shot blasted through the small waiting room. There are many who claim the hand is quicker than the eye, but there are few who will take the stand that the hand is quicker than a speeding bullet. The gun flew from the bogus policeman's hand as Pitt's shell tore into the wooden grip, taking a thumb along with it. Never before had Pitt seen such dazed uncomprehension and shocked pain as the paid killer stared at the bloody half-inch stump where his thumb had been. Pitt made to lower his gun, but raised and aimed it again as he caught the look on his opponent's face. Mouth tightened to a thin white line, black hatred glaring out from the squinting eyes behind the glasses.
"Shoot me, Major, quickly, cleanly, here!"
He tapped his chest with his uninjured hand.
"Well, well, so you speak English. My compliments, you never gave me the slightest hint that you understood any of the conversation.
Shoot me!"
The words seemed to echo in the little room and in Pitt's ears for an interminable time. "Why rush things? There's every possibility you'll hang for murdering Sergeant Arnerson anyway." Pitt pulled the hammer of the revolver back for single-action firing.
"I take it I'm safe in assuming you did kill him?"
"Yes, the sergeant is dead. Now please do the same for me."
The eyes were cold, yet pleading. "You're pretty anxious to get yourself planted." Janssen looked, but said nothing. Totally off balance, he struggled to grasp a new set of circumstances, a complete reversal of all his previous values. As a doctor, he couldn't just stand there and watch an injured man bleed profusely without aid.
"Let me take care of the hand," Janssen volunteered.
"Stay behind me and don't move," Pitt said. "Any man who wants to die is more dangerous than a cornered rat."
"But good Lord, man, you cannot stand there and gloat over his pain," Janssen protested.
Pitt ignored Janssen. "Okay, Four Eyes, I'll make a deal with you. The next bullet goes through your heart if you tell me the name of the man who pays your salary." The animal-like eyes behind the glasses never left Pitt's face. He shook his head silently and said nothing. "This isn't wartime, friend. You're not betraying your god or country. Loyalty to an employer is hardly worth your life."
"You will kill me, Major. I shall make you kill me."
He advanced toward Pitt.
"I'll give you credit," Pitt said. "You're a persistent bastard."
He pulled the trigger and the revolver roared again, the .38 bullet smashing into the burly character's left leg just above the knee. Rarely had Pitt seen such disbelief in a human face. The paid killer slowly sank to the floor, his left hand clutching his torn left leg, trying to stem the blood flow, his right hand lying motionless on the tile, surrounded by a growing pool of red.
"It seems our friend has nothing to say," Pitt said.
He pulled back the hammer to fire again.
"Please do not kill him," Janssen pleaded. "His life is not worth the burden on your soul. I beg you, Major, let me have the gun. He can cause no further harm."
Pitt hesitated several moments, torn between compassion and revenge. Then, slowly, he handed the revolver to Janssen and nodded. Janssen took it and put his hand on Pitt's shoulder as if in secret understanding.
"I am heartbroken that countrymen of mine should cause so much grief and pain to so many," the doctor said with weariness in his voice. "I will take care of these two and contact the authorities immediately. You go with Munson to Reykjavik and rest. You have a nasty-looking head wound, but it won't prove serious unless you aggravate it. Stay in bed for at least 2 days. That is a direct order from your doctor."
"There appears to be a slight obstacle to your prescription." Pitt smiled crookedly and pointed through the front doorway. "You were 100% correct about creating excitement in the village." He nodded in the direction of the road where at least 20 villagers stood silently holding every type of weapon from telescopic rifles to small-bore shotguns, all aimed steadily at the door of Janssen's cottage. Munson was resting his gun easily in the crook of one arm, 1 foot solidly on the second doorstep, his son Bjarni slightly off to one side with an old Mauser bolt-action rifle. Pitt held both hands out where they could easily be seen.
"I think now is an appropriate time, Doctor, to give me a recommendation. These good townspeople aren't sure who plays the good guys or the bad guys."
Janssen stepped past Pitt and spoke for several minutes in Icelandic. When he finished, the guns began to lower one by one, and several of the villagers drifted toward their homes, while a few lingered on the road to await further developments. Janssen extended his hand, and Pitt gripped it.
"I fervently hope you meet with success in finding the man responsible for the terrible number of senseless murders," Janssen said. "If you should meet him, I fear for your life. You are not a killer. If you were, 2 men would lie dead in my home. Your concern for life, I fear, will be your defeat. I beg you, my friend, do not hesitate when the moment arrives. God and luck go with you."
Pitt threw a last salute at Dr. Janssen and turned and stepped down the front steps to the road. Bjarni held the passenger door of the Land Rover open for him. The seat was firm and the backrest stiff, but Pitt could not have cared less. His entire body was numb. He sat there as Munson started the engine and shifted through the gears, steering the truck over a stretch of smooth, narrow pavement toward Reykjavik. Pitt could have easily drifted off into a dead sleep, but somewhere in the deep recesses of his mind a spark refused to go out. Something that he saw, something that was said. An undistinguishable something refused to let his mind slow down and rest. It was like a song he couldn't quite recall, whose title was on the tip of his tongue. Finally, he gave it up and dozed off.